Well, election week is here, and I'm going to guess you've already decided who you're going to vote for. But if you haven't, we're going to help you figure it out. Who should you vote for this week? Welcome to Sage Reverie, a podcast where we seek to live well and live wisely. I'm Mike Wilson.
And I'm Wes Smith.
We live in the great state of Wyoming, and each week, from a biblical perspective, we discuss a trending topic and what others are saying about it. If you're using these episodes for your group, there are discussion questions in the description. And for more information about our ministry, visit church307.com. Wes, we talked last week about whether or not we should vote.
Right.
We decided to vote, so... Yep. Now we got to decide
most
who,
of the time.
Usually, yeah. Now we got to figure out who we're voting for.
Okay.
I don't know if you've already decided who you're voting for or not, but what are the top criteria that you use in determining who you will vote for?
Well, I said some of that last week, and that the first thing I try to do is to say, okay, what are the issues at stake in this election that Jesus would care most about? And what vote would lead to the most likely outcome that Jesus would want the most, right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to put it through that grid. And as I said last week, it's sometimes hard because I have some things that I care a lot about that I'm not sure he cares a lot about. And so we have this conversation in each election and just about life in general, but in each election. And so that's my first criteria. I also try to ask the question, about likely outcomes in terms of, okay, just because a person has a public stand on a particular issue, what's the realistic likely outcome of some of these elections and where does my vote make the most difference as it relates to that, right? Mm-hmm. So just some realism about that. And then I ask, in which case do I not have enough information either way?
Yeah.
And if I have not done my fair share of research, then I opt out typically. So those are just some of the ways I begin. What about you? How do you begin? How do you begin to make a selection?
I have a whole process that I go through. Actually, I'm going to jump ahead. I'm going to say what those are now. So
okay.
I think there are four ways that people choose who they're going to vote for.
Okay.
And the first one is personalities.
Yeah.
It's just like, I like that guy or I don't like that guy. Mm-hmm. Her voice is annoying. His laugh is annoying. All that surface level, pointless. If that's how you're deciding who to vote for, then
don't vote.
I'm sorry. You need to not show up at the polls. Right. But the sad thing is that happens often. I'd also put in that category celebrity culture. A celebrity I like is voting for this person, so I'm going to vote for that person. The truth is a lot of politics comes down to who's the prettier or who's the most eloquent speaker, and it's just a personalities thing. The second way that people choose to vote is through groupthink. Everybody that I know is voting for so-and-so, so I'm going to vote for that. This is the reason why you can... predict who's going to win in certain cities and in certain neighborhoods because communities vote together. And I want to vote with the popular person to vote for in my community. And so it's just kind of groupthink. I follow the crowd. And because everybody I know is voting for this person, I'm going to vote for that person so I can feel connected to my community. And I would also say that's a poor way of voting because communities are often misled. The crowds shouted, "Crucify him." And everybody's just like, "Oh, this is what we're doing. Okay, crucify him." And it's right, like, right. No, actually, let's do some research and figure out if this is the best way to do it. Probably a better way, the third one would be the amount of agreement. The number, like, I agree with this person on the largest number of issues. And so I'm going to vote with that person. This is kind of how political parties happen. It's like, well, I'm just going to align with the Republican Party on the most number of issues. So I'm just going to vote across the board for Republicans because you add them up. I agree with them on more issues than the other. And I wouldn't say that's a terrible way of voting. And that's probably the way most people do it. But what I believe is the best way of voting is determine, like you were saying, what is the most important issues. Not the largest number of issues. Mm-hmm. What are the most important issues? And vote for the person that I agree with on the most important issues. And so that just becomes a difficult math equation.
Yeah.
It's like, That takes a tremendous amount of research and prayer and study to figure out what is most important. Will voting based on that topic actually make an impact? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not, even if there's a most important topic, I also have to then ask the question, is voting for this person actually going to make an impact in that area? Or does that person have no insight on that topic or no impact influence on that?
Yep.
That. So yep. Yeah, it just becomes a complicated yep. math equation.
Yeah.
But I believe it's one worth doing mm-hmm. rather than just going with the crowd or just going with a political party because I agree with them on the largest number of issues. We in the Christian faith right now would be pretty passionate about some issues that the elections are going to have some impact on. I'm pretty pro immigration. I'm pro legal immigration, but I'm pretty pro immigration. I think, and so that is a motivation for me. Pro life, pro choice is a motivation for me. Helping the poor is a motivation for me. So there's, and then you have to figure out, okay, voting for who mm-hmm. will help me on those topics. And so I think I align with you on a lot of those. Mm-hmm. Is that similar to how you would decide?
Much so. And so when I'm voting for a president versus a county commissioner, one, you know, you talk about the pro-life, pro-choice. That'd be the number one issue for me when I'm voting in a national election. Yep. When I'm voting for a county commissioner, it's not necessarily the number one issue.
Yeah.
It's the number one issue I care about, but I don't know that that impacts that discussion all that much. And so maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe some more help me understand that better. But I might vote for somebody who, you know, in my community who maybe will effectively lead something that's not a top issue.
Yeah.
So it kind of streams down, maybe is the right word, from whichever election I'm voting on. But yeah, I think we're on the same page there. I think if I don't know, like, so your option three, your fourth was your best, your option three was okay. If I don't know the candidates, I might go option three, where you just align with the party or whatever, if you don't know. But I think your last one would be well said.
Yeah. For me, it comes down to most people vote for themselves. I don't mean like they write in their names, but like, if I vote for this person, will it help my bank account or not? Mm-hmm. That's how most people are motivated to vote. And which is why the economy is always the top. I mean, the truth is whoever is predicted to do the best in the economy usually wins the election because most people are voting for their pocketbooks. That's an outdated phrase, pocketbook, bank accounts. It's like, is voting for this
person?
What is
a pocketbook?
I think it's a wallet, isn't it?
Is it a wallet? I don't know. I've heard checkbook? The phrase, but it's maybe a checkbook,
I don't know where that comes from. My dad used to say it a lot. That's pocketbook. What it is, pocketbook. Most people vote for themselves. They vote selfishly. I would say as Christians, we should vote selflessly. I should be voting for what is going to do the greatest amount of good for the greatest number of people. And I'm not saying I always am exactly right in determining who that is, but I'm going to try to figure out, to do my best to figure out what will do the greatest amount of good for the greatest amount of people. So then you kind of have to try to figure out, okay, who are the victims? There's going to be a lot of disagreement. Who needs the protection? Who needs the help? And the problem is we live in a victim society, a victimhood society where victimhood has been elevated to this high status where now everybody is claiming to be a victim and everybody wants to be. It used to be the opposite. It was like, no, everybody wants to be the strong one. Everybody wants to be seen as the toughest. But now it's like there's so many different communities, so many different cultures claiming to be the victims. So now we have the extra added work to figure out, like this lady.
Situation worse.
No, you are. By not following the law. First of all, I don't have to identify myself.
Yes, you do.
Actually, I don't. It's called common law. You should read up on it. I do not. Okay? So we both know that I don't. I am a woman of God. This is my right as much as it is yours. This is my land as much as it is yours. I did not sign up for this. I am a Christian woman of God, and you are not going to put your disgusting rules on me that are false and not true. I will not have it. You understand that? I will not have it. I'm sick of being bullied. I'm sick of being lied to.
They're false and not true.
It's not going to happen anymore. Do you understand?
So she, wow. she's a victim in her mind. Mm-hmm. Like she's mm-hmm. claiming to, I was looking for a victim clip to play and I tried really hard to find one that was not LeBron James.
Okay. Yeah. You found somebody one whining. Very different than I would have expected.
No, but so many people whining and claiming to be victims. You've got to try to figure out, okay, who are the, because I don't want to be whined into submission. I don't want to just help people because they claim to be victims. I want to figure out, okay, who actually needs my protection? Who actually needs
so much help? Misinformation now?
Yeah.
Right. And I just, I travel, as you know, and supervise, oversee churches in different regions of our country. Mm-hmm. And from region to region, the views are so different.
Yeah.
And it's obvious to me, like, it starts with a different source of information. Mm. And it's just so divergent from there, right? Depending on where you got your information. And I think to live wisely in today's world is a lot of research and wise decision-making about where you will get your information and how much you'll trust it. And then divergent views and reading that. It's never been more important in any time to get information filters that are wise in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know that she's saying that complaining lady, I am a woman of God. Mm-hmm. And I kept trying to figure, she kept throwing that into this argument. I kept figuring out why is this, why you're a victim?
Yeah.
You're a woman of God. What is that? Yeah. And I think we have as a church fallen into the temptation to claim victimhood status too often. Mm-hmm. And that eventually you claim to be a victim enough when people see that you're not a victim as often as you are, and they'll just tune you out. Mm. They quit hearing that. And so I would say, yes, are there times that the church has been persecuted? Are there the times that we have been victims? Yes, there are. However, probably not as often as we have, like our culture, tried to claim victimhood status. And so we have to figure out, okay, when should we be calling out that behavior and when shouldn't we?
And who, again, back to who are we listening to who are telling us that we're victims?
Yeah.
Right? Like, so where do we get that? And is there a falsehood along that journey of information? And you're right. If you just constantly, you know, you've mentioned several times Jesus, you know, whether it's before Pilate or in other scenarios, doesn't think of himself as a victim.
Yeah.
Doesn't call that out. And so, yeah, cautious with that. There are times to stand up to say we are being mistreated and unfairly, you know, in some ways persecuted. There's times to call that out if it needs to be called out. But wow, is that overused?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Pilate, like, was wanting Jesus to claim victim status. He's like, what's going on here? I don't understand. Why are they bringing you to me? Like, who are you? I don't, he's right. Like an outsider in this whole conversation. And these religious people are bringing him like, you got to kill him. And Pilate's like, Jesus, what's going on? Like, who are you? Mm. And Jesus refused in that interaction to play the victim card. Mm. And I think that is a lesson for all of us to say, no, if I have some power, if I have some ability to do good, then I'm going to use that power to help others and not always to claim to be victim so that I can use that power to help myself. And I think that's just a tool of Satan that convinces us that we should be using our power for our own benefit rather than for the power benefit of others.
Well, but it's more than just how we're treated. I think, you know, part of why we vote and part of why we engage in the political arena is to help those who are truly victims be protected.
Yeah.
But once again, who is that really? Mm. And figuring that out, this takes enormous wisdom in our day because we're told on the one hand, this group is being victimized and here's why. And when you dig into it, no, they're not generally the victim. It's here. So understanding that, you talk about immigration. So I've been enormously impacted on that issue by what I experienced personally, because I would tend to be conservative I'm a Republican. I tend to vote more conservatively than I don't on most issues. And I had a certain way of thinking about immigration, but that's been edited somewhat by my personal experiences on the issue when I got greater firsthand personal information, walked with those who are immigrants. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that I'm, you know, now some, you know, radical shift and all that, but it did impact it.
Yeah.
And I just think understanding in our world who the real victim is and then taking an active role and standing up for that victim is so crucial and who we vote for.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then everybody has their different prescriptions for how to solve that victimhood problem.
Sure.
Like, for example, I have a friend who's pro-choice. Mm-hmm. And so we have this debate often.
Right.
And she has strong opinions about how you're actually protecting more people, helping more people to be pro-choice than you are to be pro-life. You're actually helping the mother. You're actually, if you outlawed abortion, you would actually have just as many abortions, but they'd be more gruesome and violent abortions. They'd be illegal abortions that were done in back alleys. And so actually, even though we would both say we're trying to do the most good for the largest number of people, we come at it from different angles. Now, she is obviously very wrong. And so, but we do, it is a, it's not as simple as, okay, now I've identified the victim. We've got all the solutions. Nope. Exactly. Even after I have identified the victim or those who need my help, I have to then figure out what is the best way of helping them. And
you've been wrestling in the drug world, drug issue for that for decades, right? What's the legalization, harsher sentences, you know, all these kind of things we debate about the rationale. And I don't, there's a, sometimes there's not easy answers on these things.
Right.
Like you and I would both be pro-life in terms of our political persuasion on that issue, but there is complexity on that issue. It is not as simple sometimes as it seems on all these issues.
Yeah. And obviously all the politicians have all the answers.
Sure.
And so every politician coming in is quite confident that their way of doing it is the right way of doing it. Here's one politician who has done just way more than anybody would have expected.
I've traveled to every part of this country during the last 6 years. During my service in the United States Congress, I took the initiative in creating the internet. I took the initiative in moving forward a whole range of initiatives that have proven to be important to our country's economic growth and environmental protection, improvements in our educational system. During a quarter century of public service, including most of it long before I came into my current job, I have worked to try to improve the quality of life in our country and in our world.
Too soon?
That's the... That's the famous "I invented the internet."
I invented
clip,
the internet. Where would we be if he did not invent the internet? Thank the Lord for the politicians and their ability to invent things.
Absolutely.
Where some people would say, "No, politicians, get out of the way so others can invent things." Some others would say, "No, let's prop up the government so the government can invent things." And so you have that complex argument. That's an easy one to pick on, but the truth is so many politicians, you watch these debates and they all claim to have the answers. They claim to have the solutions. So how do people decide? Mm-hmm. How do people figure out, okay, I mean, the truth is a lot of them are intelligent people and they can lay out, some of them are not, but they can lay out their reasoning for why they believe they're, so how is the average person who doesn't know all the ins and outs of how an economy works. Mm-hmm. They're not economists, but they have to now decide which politician is saying. How do they decide? Mm-hmm. Who do they listen to? How do they figure
out? Said something earlier about not voting with the crowd, just going along with the flow and everybody around you and all that. And that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. I believe, though, that the issues we face are complex enough that it does matter who somebody I respect on that topic votes for.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's a component in this moment. Like When it comes to an issue like the economy or like immigration or some of these very complex issues, I really do want to know who some people that I respect who are engaged in that topic. What do you think?
Yeah.
And listen to them. That's part of research for me. Yeah. It's not just do I read, you know, different viewpoint newspaper or listen to the news from two different or try to listen to unbiased, whatever. It's no people I respect. What do they think about that? I think finding people in your life now, it's a wise way to live life. We're just talking about voting, but Absolutely. This is a wise way to live life. Like nowadays things are so complex that if I want to succeed and be, you know, father, husband, leader, whatever it is, I want to find somebody, I want to find experts that I really trust and seek their opinion and their counsel around me. Maybe people are watching this podcast to get good information about something. I don't know what it would be for sure, but
hopefully they're not deciding if they're going to own a pet or not.
Well, hopefully, podcast, yeah, true. Things. Hopefully I put a little divergent opinion on that topic. It's amazing to me you could be a pastor and think that. But anyway, I think finding people in my world who know something about the economy and how taxation actually impacts those who are victims. I want to listen to that. I want to read that. Maybe I don't know them personally, but maybe I read a little bit on that. So, yeah. That's the way I go about trying to figure out some of those things, because a politician is skilled at convincing me that they do have the right answer, and they should try to do that. That's their role.
Yeah,
I don't disparage them for that. That's their job. It's Al Gore's job to say good stuff about his background, right?
Yep.
So,
I this is a little bit of a hot take, but this is one reason why I am a big fan of Twitter or X. And I use it a lot because I'm able to go to people that I've trusted and say it, and I'm learning from them specifically. It's not a giant news organization where it's like all this has to be filtered through editors and producers and everything to get the right thing out. And I don't trust those organizations, but I do trust some people. And a benefit of Twitter or X for me is that I can hear directly from those people and I can learn their opinions. This is why podcasts I think are beneficial. And so I know we can't get all our news from Twitter, but I get a lot of my news from Twitter because I'm hearing it from the source. And I also feel like it's not just who do you trust, but it's like, why do you trust them? For me, it's, I want to know that you have a biblical foundation for determining what you believe. I want to know that I'm listening to somebody whose motivation is not selfish, whose motivation is not, how is this going to help people like me? Because even if I'm not voting for how am I going to benefit from this, but how do people that look like me, how do people that live similar to me, how do people in my community benefit? But how do people in general, specifically those who are the least and the lost, how are they going to benefit from this? And so I'm going to put my trust in somebody because, I can't educate myself on every single topic.
Right.
I have to at some point say, okay, I'm going to trust that this person did their research and follow them skeptically, but I'm going to trust them to a certain extent.
There's a lot of unfiltered now conversations that I can participate in or view or whatever, observe that I couldn't before.
Yeah.
You know, so people talk about now the world's so biased. Well, 20 years ago, you had three networks.
Yep.
All of whom we now know were very biased. And that was really your only option. Well, now I have options with getting information from people who are pretty trusted and they're not as motivated to try to persuade. So I think it's better than it's ever been if I make the effort. Twitter would be an example of that, right? So
there has been this diversification of information.
Yeah.
That I believe is incredibly helpful. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're never going to do away with all of the moderation and editing that happens, but I do believe that there has been a diversification and our ability to learn. It used to be that for Christians, I learned so much from my pastor, but just my pastor. And I didn't get all this other information from other pastors. I think there has been this leveling of Christian ideology, Christian theology that has been incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
In that it used to be some pastor could say some crazy off the wall, unorthodox idea.
Right.
And nobody would ever catch him on it.
Yeah.
Because who's going to hear it?
Yeah.
No, unless you can get your hands on a physical tape of them saying it. You're not in isolation. Everybody's just trusting that this pastor knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And now that's just not the case. Everything's on the internet. Yeah. If I say something that's just totally wrong, somebody's going to call me on it. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not somebody in my congregation, some other pastor of the denomination is going to step in and say, wait, you're off.
Yeah, we're all going to see it.
Yep.
We're all going to see it now.
And right. I think that's a healthy thing. And that's part of what's happening in the news world right now is there were so many people saying things. Now we've got enough whistleblowers that are able to come in and say, hold on.
Yeah.
You got independent journalists now that are not beholden to anybody who can now call balls and strikes. I think that's a healthy thing for our community.
I have learned, for instance, in the last 4 or 5 years, so much about creation care. So when it comes to the environment, there was always the liberal and the conservative. And somebody from Wyoming who cares about oil industry jobs, coal industry jobs, those kind of things. I tended to be on one side of that, right? But in the last 5 years or so, I've begun to get information from Christ followers who care about the planet greatly. But it's not about a political agenda. It's not about one particular, thing. It's about an overall overarching creation care.
Yeah.
And it's been powerful for me, but it's a new source of media that it's a whole new stream that wouldn't have been available to me 7-8 years ago.
Yeah, right. And it would have been content that was edited out.
Yeah. Edited out because it didn't match the agenda of one side or the other.
Yep. Yep.
And it's a whole new stream of conversation for me that's been extremely helpful.
It really makes you wonder if the two-party system in America can hold up with everybody realizing I don't have to always agree with one side or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
I can agree with them sometimes and somebody else other times.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder, maybe this is an outdated way of doing things. That's for somebody.
Hopefully, we have become more nuanced and wiser and are getting, just on this creation care. So this pipeline maybe makes sense, but this pipeline, I don't have to be for all pipelines.
Across the board,
right? I can understand cost benefit and some wiser things. And before, it's like, I'm in this group or I'm in this group.
Yep. Yeah, I'm pro-education, anti-education. Trying to think of the when employees come together and start a group to advocate for themselves. What do you call that?
Unions?
Union.
Okay.
I'm pro-union or anti-union.
Okay,
you can have a nuanced opinion and say, I'm pro this union and not this union or whatever.
Right. Absolutely. So and different types of unions. And it's just way more complex now.
Yeah.
And your understanding of all that. Absolutely. We're past the pocketbook era in politics.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that is. That's great.
The answer to the question, who should I vote for? This is kind of a gotcha. But I would say the answer is not yourself. You vote selflessly. You vote for those that are in need. Mm-hmm. And you vote for the person that's going to help those that are in need. What will do the greatest good for the largest number of people. Yeah.
Selflessly, thoughtfully, bathed in prayer, and engage.
Yeah.
Engage. Absolutely.
I do hope you'll engage. And thank you for joining us this week. We will see you next week for the next episode of Sage Reverie. We're going to talk about the Enneagram next week.